Hello everybody and welcome to tonight's stream. And I'm live back with Laura. I've been really excited about this. Me and Laura don't get to stream enough together as we used to. So this is a special night. And we've got a bit of drama for you tonight. And we all know that everyone likes a bit of drama. Everyone likes when me and Laura get to sit down and tear somebody to pieces. And you've already guessed who's being torn to pieces tonight. And I want to say a special thank you before we get started for the help I got with the thumbnail. If you're amused by the thumbnail, which is obviously a jokey thumbnail, that was the Patriarch who helped me do that. So thank you, Patriarch, for answering the call. I think I rang him about tea time last night and I was like, look, I want this doing in about 15 minutes. And he didn't disappoint. So well done, lad. Well done. You don't get enough praise, but you certainly deserve it. Anyway, we're live on Rumble, we're live on Odyssey, we're live on DLive, and we're live on Entropy, all the usual places. Please do share it, because this is a really important stream. Obviously, we've started it with sort of a bit of a jokey intro, but there is a serious side to this. Not least the fact that Tommy Robinson, a guy that neither understands demographics nor is genuinely invested in it, is now trying to steal this issue from genuine ethno-nationalists. So this is a really important stream. And if you like the stream and if you support our work, please do consider making a donation or supporting us financially. You can do so via Entropy, Odyssey, and Rumble. You can send a super chat. And when we finish the stream, which is going to include a couple of other news items, we will round things out by answering your questions. And this is the sort of best time to ask us a question. So if you want to see me and Laura argue over something menial, this is the time to drive that wedge with a question. And obviously, I've said this many times before, but nothing we do goes behind a paywall. So if you do like what we do, if you do support what we do, please consider hitting that donate button through Entropy, Odyssey, or Rumble. Now, you can also donate via crypto. All the crypto links in the description below. And you can write to me at mark@thefallofwesternman.com. You can't write to Laura because she doesn't want to answer your emails. She said that before the show specifically. She said, Mark, don't give out my email address because all these people keep pestering me. But you can get in touch. She didn't really say that. That's making me sound like a lot nicer than she is. That was just our little joke. But you can also get in touch with us via Patriotic Alternative, which is patrioticalternative.org.uk. And you can tell this is like the good old days before Sam got put in prison, Laura had a second baby, and then before she wobbled over like a crazy old woman failing to carry her shopping and bust her arm. And by the way, she sent me these pictures of her arm, and I can tell you this, I've seen a lot of real life crime videos, but what she did to her arm, it's almost worse than anything I've seen in police files. It's absolutely sickening. And it was bad enough when she sent me the bloody x-ray, but when she sent me the picture of them sewing it back together, it's like something out of a Frankenstein film, what they've done to her arm. Laura, how are you even still alive? And how did you manage to do that much damage to your elbow?
Well, it's actually Grandma Towler's fault because she sent me to the shop to get some milk. So I went to the shop to get some milk and I was holding it in my right arm and then I tripped over and I didn't let go of the milk. So I fell onto my elbow and at first I didn't really realise what had happened. I was just sat on the floor and I was like, oh, I better get up and carry on going. And I couldn't lift my arm off the floor. It was just floppy on the floor. It didn't hurt, but I was just like, I started to feel really sick. And then I felt my elbow and I could feel the bone had just completely snapped in half. And I was like, oh, no, I'm going to faint. And then this lady ran over to help me. She's like, you okay? And I was like, I've broken my elbow. I need an ambulance. And they said it was going to be 3.5 hours for an ambulance. So I phoned Sam and Sam took me to the hospital, had an x-ray. And they were like, yeah, you've broken it, which I knew because my bone was sticking out. But yeah, I had a cast on for a week and then I had surgery on my elbow and they've put a metal plate in there. Which is going to stay in there forever. So I'm like, I have a bionic arm now. But yeah, I'm recovering. I had my bandages took off. It's all just taped up at the minute. I just can't bend my elbow at the minute. I can only bend it very slightly. So I think I might just leave myself unmuted if that's okay, just so I don't have to keep lifting my arm up. But it's just, everyone keeps saying, oh, you can have a rest now. And it's like, I have a 1-year-old and a 3-year-old. I cannot have a rest. Life goes on. They still get up at 6 o'clock in the morning. I need picking up and feeding and nappies changing and stuff. So, yeah, it's tough with the kids. But, you know, these things happen and it will heal fully. And Sam has been really great, and so have my family. So we
can't. I thought you were going to have a dig at Sam because you said, oh, I've got a 1-year-old and a 3-year-old. And I was just waiting for you to say, you know, and a husband with arrested development or something like that. I was waiting for you to. Like a big teenager for a husband who just sort of bumbles around the house, leaving piles of clothes.
Leaving piles of tools. Yeah, he does, yeah. Every single room has got a pile of tools in it. But no, Sam's great. Like, I'm just so lucky to have him. Because Catherine's a bit older, so she's almost 4, but our youngest, Violet, she's 1.5. That's the hard one, because every time you try and change a nappy or get a dress, she just tries to run away, and I'm like, please, I've only got one arm. So, yeah, he's just really helping with the kids at the minute. But obviously he's working through the day, so I'm sort of by myself, so it's quite hard. But, yeah, it'll mend, like I say. People go through worse.
Well, they do indeed go through worse, but I mean, it is pretty bad. It is pretty bad. And I feel for you. And I'm pleased that Sam is doing a much better job at looking after you than I ever would have done, because I'd have been like, oh my God, this is going to make my life a nightmare. I think I'd have had to sort of like run away for sort of a couple of months until it healed enough for you to sort of start doing your regular womanly duties again. I'm not like the greatest carer, you see. I'm sort of like, oh God.
No, yeah. To be fair, you're the last person that I'd want there helping me, because you just left it about yourself. So, yeah, let's just say I'm glad I'm married to Sam and not you.
Yeah, it was quite funny because at first, sort of when it happened, I kind of like feigned sort of being really bothered. And then about a day into it, I was like, look, the thing I'm most concerned about with all this is, how is this going to affect your work rate and what else do I have to do? And you were like, I knew you were going to say that.
I knew you were burning it, and you would, and your first thought would have been like, what work do I have to get covered? But yeah, I mean, like I said, it's happened at quite a good time. I said to you on the phone, you know, at least it's not at the time of the conference or the camp. It's just sort of the end of the year. We had the Remembrance Sunday parades, and obviously we've got Christmas parties coming up, but that's all quite casual. So it's happened at the best time of the year. I will say that.
It happened at the best time of the year. Well, look, we're here tonight for not just your elbow drama, but for some real drama. So obviously everyone knows what this stream's about. They've seen the headline, Tommy attempts to steal the red squirrel. And they've seen the amusing thumbnail, which we've also thanked the Patriot for. Are we ready to get into this and let's show what Tommy Robinson said? Because there's no point just talking about it. Shall we let everyone see what he's actually said?
Yeah, let's do it.
Do you want to be a red squirrel? Look, the UK has both native red squirrels and introduced grey squirrels. So grey squirrels were imported into the UK. We used to be home to all red squirrels, which are a significant threat. The grey squirrels are a significant threat to the native population due to the competition for food and their ability to carry the deadly squirrel pox virus. Grey squirrels are larger, more dominant, and can digest unrepented acorns, while red squirrels are smaller and lack immunity to squirrel pox. As a result, grey squirrels have largely replaced the red squirrels across the UK, with the native species now primarily found. So there's no red squirrels left. You're going to be a red squirrel. If you're white, you're British, you're English, you're Scottish, you're Welsh, any of those, Northern Irish, we are going to be the red squirrels. That's basically the analogy. I remember years ago I was going to do the T-shirt of a red squirrel with all grey squirrels surrounding it. That's exactly what's happening in London, 33% white. That's exactly what's happening in every major city. You're being replaced by a more aggressive, hostile, violent, imported community of grey squirrels or Muslims. So the grey squirrels are the Muslims, right? I always get it back to Islam all the time. I made that story from the grey squirrels and the red squirrels into Islam. It's a true analogy. Imported in, hostile, violent, replaced them. And now there's no red squirrels in the UK. Do you want to be a red squirrel?
Now, where do we start with this,
Laura? Do you know what I was just thinking? There's so much to say about this. Oh, is that his website?
Can I just start by saying, like, the way he ends that on such a smug note, like he's some kind of, you know, 150 IQ genius that has come up with this amazing analogy when he's basically stolen it from us. In fact, I shouldn't have opened the show by saying I'm here with Laura Tower. I should have opened the show by saying I'm here with some bird, because it was actually you that started this whole red squirrel thing back in the day. And when you were posting about this, that's how he referred to you, didn't he? He referred to you as if you were like just some daft woman, some bird who's talking about the red squirrels.
He said, so, there's these white supremacists. He went, sorry, that's my terrible southern accent. He went, there's this geezer and some bird. I don't even know what her name is. So you're the geezer and I'm some bird. But yeah, I mean, I didn't start it. I mean, it's kind of obvious because we're talking about a native species and then something that was brought here. But yeah, you continue because I feel like I've just cut you off a bit there. But yeah, we were talking about it. Obviously, Patriotic Alternative formed in September 2019, so 6 years ago now. And he actually, when we were talking about it, he made a video to us in December 2019, so 6 years ago, saying, these lot are talking about demographics, white supremacists and stuff like that. And it's like, hang on, fast forward to today. And in that video, he used the word white, English, Scottish, native. These are all...
Well, wait a second, he actually used the correct term for the collective indigenous people of the mainland. He used the term white Britons, didn't he? Yeah. As it appears on the census.
Yeah, he used the word native. So you're talking about ethnicity here. And I saw that video. Did I send it to you or did you see it somewhere else? Because I remember mentioning
you commented on it. Commented on it, but you didn't dare bring it up with me. I saw it on your news feed and you probably sort of heard the nuclear explosion somewhere to the south of you in Yorkshire and was like, Mark's seen it. I'll give him a call now. And I was like, when I saw it, I was raging. I was like, how dare he? Because this is, not only did he ignore this for years and insult people like us for bringing it up, but he actually went as far to deny this for a long time, didn't he? And to sort of not broach this subject and to say that the people who did broach it were white supremacists, we were Nazis. You know, I believe he even said about, you know, anti-migration protesters and, you know, right-wing protesters who talk about demographics, that if they turned up in his town, he'd be out there fighting them in the street because he wouldn't want those kind of people in his area. And now he's just cribbed all of our talking points. And you've got to remember as well, which organisation in the UK has the red squirrel as a logo? Now, there might be more than us. There might be something like the Red Squirrel Society or something that has it. But we are the nationalist organization that has the red squirrel on our membership card, our membership packs. You know, it features on our artwork. We have leaflets with pictures of the red squirrel on. This is something we've been talking about for years and years. And now he's just grabbed it as if it's his issue, as if, you know, oh, I've just figured this out and we need to start talking about it. And it's all a big joke because I've come up with this analogy, like he's just wandering around Poland, allegedly with a large bag of sniffing salts. And, you know, it hits him there when he sees a red squirrel bound across the pavement that the ones in the UK are now grey. And he's like, wow, you know, who would have thought it? And
he's calling it my squirrel analogy. His.
Yeah.
It's like, what? It's not. I'm not saying it's mine either. I'm just saying that, you know, it's a common argument that people make. I remember there was even an episode of Coronation Street a few years ago where Roy Cropper, you know, owned the white supremacists by debunking the red squirrel argument. He didn't debunk it. He was talking absolute rubbish. But even on Coronation Street, we're responding to it a few years ago. But to be honest, when I was watching that video and he was talking about like native peoples and English, which is an ethnicity, white people, I was like, oh my God, like, is Tommy where we are on the demographic issue now? And then obviously in the end, he had to flip it back to Islam again, which doesn't make sense because you've just been talking about race. You've just been talking about native people. You've just been talking about English people. And then to bring up Islam, which is an ideology. Now, obviously, there is a connection between Islam and ethnicity. If you see a Pakistani in this country, they're probably Muslim. If you see a white person, they're probably not Muslim. Obviously, we're not naive enough to suggest there's no connection. But according to you, if these people disavowed that ideology of Islam, then would they be allowed here or not? If not, if you still don't want these people here, then it's a racial issue. It's an ethno-nationalist issue, or white supremacism, as you would call it. That's the part of the video that bothers me. Not necessarily that he stole it and tried to make it his own, but the fact that he talks about race and ethnicity all the way through, and then all of a sudden he's like, but it's just about Islam. Are they native peoples or not? You seem to recognise them. If there are native peoples, there are also non-native peoples. So why are you just saying it's Islam? Because the replacement in this country isn't just Islamic. There are lots of people coming from other countries who are not Muslims as well.
Look, there's two things that are annoying, and you've got them both right, and they're both as irritating as the... Well, there's a number of things annoying. Firstly, it's his analogy now. He's come up with this. He's this sort of 150 IQ genius that just walks around the park, an acorn lands on his head, a squirrel pokes his head out from the bush, and then he figures out demographics. But he then starts, as you say, talking about Islam. So not only does he lie and claim that he's come up with this when he knows that it was other people who came up with this, and he slagged those people off, he's besmirched those people, and he's done everything he can to put his foot on the heads of those people. But worse still, he then subverts the message at the end, because this isn't an Islamic issue. Islam is not an ethnic group. It's a religion. Islam is not a race. It is a religion. Now, white Britons are, well, three ethnic groups, essentially, the English, Scottish and the Welsh. And those three ethnic groups make up the indigenous people. Now, let's say tomorrow white Britons were replaced, not by Muslims, but by 50 million Afro-Caribbeans who all happen to be Christian. The analogy would still hold. We would still be being replaced. The red would still be being outbred and replaced and having, you know, its ecosystem changed and modified by an invasive species. That's what it's about. It's about a group that are different, invading an environment and forcing out the indigenous species. And it's amazing how he tries to subvert this and how he tries to bring it back to Islam. Now, I'm not saying Islam isn't a problem in the UK. It obviously is. But the fact is, Islam isn't the only problem. The UK has numerous problems. And if you look at many of the recent mass stabbings, random acts of violence, if you look at the last 3 years of atrocities, you look at 2023, Valdo Calacane in Nottingham. He was a black man who originally came from Portugal. You look at 2024, the Southport attacker, although he looked up Islamic terror documents, he was not a Muslim. And if you look finally this year at Anthony Williams, the train attacker, there's no information to suggest he was a Muslim either. All of those men are of Afro-Caribbean descent. All of them came to Britain from overseas, obviously. One of them was born here, but his parents came to Britain from overseas, from Uganda. These people are not indigenous, but Tommy isn't talking about that. Tommy won't actually talk about the issue that the red squirrel represents. He's still trying this diversionary tactic of making out that if we get rid of Islam, everything else will be fine, when it won't. Now, there's plenty of parts of London I would never want to go to. And they're not just parts that are Muslim. I mean, look at the woman in Birmingham the other day. White woman stood at a bus stop. Black man comes up to her, stabs her for apparently no reason, unprovoked attack. She dies. Do you want to live like that? Well, I don't think that guy's a Muslim either. But Tommy is trying to lead it back to this. And look where he's just come back from. He's just come back from Israel. And it's very, very interesting that Tommy Robinson is being forced down this line of addressing demographics. And some might say, well, this is actually a good thing, Mark, because Tommy is now being forced to talk about demography, because I don't think he actually wants to even talk about this, because he keeps going on about how he's got black friends, he's got friends, Indian friends, he's even got Muslim friends. He doesn't want to leave the UK. The only people he wants out is a certain section of the Muslim population. Well, that's not going to turn around the demographic nightmare that we face. So I don't think these are even his opinions. I think these are things that he is being told to raise so that his audience don't turn to people like us, so his audience don't turn to people like Steve Laws, so his audience don't start listening to people like Zuma Historian, so his audience don't start listening to the lads in White Vanguard. You know, there are so many groups in the UK now and so many prevalent individuals talking about the importance of race and ethnicity. I think Tommy is doing this not as a gateway to us, but I think this is part of his job as a gatekeeper.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, watching the video, it was going so well up into the end when he started going on about Islam, and I was like, what? That's just completely different to what you've just said up until this point. Like I said, mentioning native peoples and then all of a sudden flipping to an ideology, which any race or any ethnicity can be part of. And like I said, I know there are connections between certain ethnicities and certain religions, but it just didn't make sense to me. He understands, but he's choosing purposely not to say it. And to elaborate on what you said, you know, you've mentioned a few crimes that have happened there recently. I think that was what woke me up to, because I used to be in that bubble of, you know, Islam is not a race, therefore I'm not racist. And I used to think like all the problems are to do with Islam. But then someone just said to me, well, it's not Muslims out on the streets with machetes stabbing each other up. And I was like, oh yeah, there's a lot of black crime, isn't there? And that sort of made me realise that the problem was demography, in the sense of the white British ethnic group being replaced. So I think he's purposely choosing not to, not necessarily wake up, because I think he does understand, but he's choosing purposely not to relay that to his followers and supporters. And also, it's not just because of the crime that this is a problem. It's the fact that we're now strangers in our own country, in our own home. You know, we don't have anywhere else to go. All these other groups have got homeland elsewhere where they can be around their people, their language, their religion, their culture, etc., etc. This is our home, and there are places like Bradford, Luton, Slough, Birmingham, Leicester, London, where it's spot the white person. I went to hospital in Leeds the other day to have them see to my elbow, and I was walking through the city centre, and honestly, I'd say it was about 50% white, and a lot of those white people were not English, because I you know, you can hear people walking, when they walk past, they're speaking different languages. And I was like, I'm a stranger. Leeds still feels like my home city. I was like, I'm a stranger in my own city now. You know, there's no connection between me and the people who are walking past me. A lot of women in is it burqas or niqabs, the one that covers most of their face as well, there's nothing there, there's no connection.
I think that's the niqab.
Yeah, there's no connection with them, because you can see two eyes poking out, and there's no expression or anything, so you can't connect to these people. And it's, you know, not being able to speak to your neighbours because you don't have the same language, not being able to use the same community shops because they're buying different clothes and food and that kind of things. That to me is, I don't know if I can say it's a bigger problem than the crime, but it's a problem that I experience on a daily basis, which is a very serious problem. So this is why our demographic, or one of the reasons why our demographic replacement is an issue. It's just the fact that this is our home and it feels like we're losing it and we don't have anywhere else to go.
Well, I completely agree. And it actually hit me about how much Leeds has changed, because I lived in Leeds for about 20 years. And during those 20 years, it changed quite a bit. But then I went and moved to another city, started a family, and I came back to Leeds for the march we did through Leeds for Sam. And walking through Leeds city centre on that day shocked me to how it had changed. I remember when I first arrived in Leeds, and it was a lovely white city. The largest city near to me was Leicester, which is the first city where whites became a minority. And, you know, I came to Leeds and I was like, wow, this is white. You know, it feels completely different. People were friendlier. And now Leeds has been totally transformed. And when we marched through Leeds for Sam, it was incredible to see just how few white people are out. You saw the odd white shopper, but the city centre was full of people that didn't look like us. And you can see it. And now Tommy's even saying, well, London's 33% white British. You know, I mean, I think the official figures are about 36%, but he's sort of, you know, so 33%, and he's saying this. But again, London hasn't just been taken over by Muslims.
Yeah, it's not 67% Muslim, is it?
No.
So, like, in giving that statistic, you're recognising that this is not just an Islamic issue.
Exactly. And you've got some facts you'd like to go through with this, haven't you? Do you want me to put them up on screen?
Yeah, well, I'm sorry if it's blurry. Obviously, I got suspended from YouTube, so I couldn't get the a proper screenshot of it. And then my computer that this was on was confiscated by the police when Sam got arrested and our home got raided. And then I searched the source at the bottom. But I don't know if you find this with statistics. I find this all the time. The page will disappear. It gets memory holed. So the government released statistics about certain things or groups like YouGov. And then all of a sudden, a few years in the future, they're like, bury those statistics and you can't find them anymore. But it was from the Office for National Statistics. And when Tommy made that video back in 2019, calling Mark a geezer and me some bird and saying, they don't have kids. Well, you did actually have a child at the time. And now you have two. And I have two children, but when he made that video, Sam and I had only been together for a few months, so we, you know, physically couldn't have children at that time. But yeah, a lot of his video was like, go and have kids, and now obviously we have two children each. But he was saying the replacement is Islamic. Clearly from these statistics, the replacement is not just Islamic. I'm not sure if the audience can see it. It might be a little bit blurry, but he said that.
I'm going to give this as an annotation. Mm. On the left is the 2011 statistics, and the darkest blue is white British. On the right are the 2031 statistics, and again, the dark blue is white British. And it shows how many cities the white British, or it's not cities actually, sorry, it's not cities, it's how many unitary authorities, because obviously London is a city, but it has multiple authorities. So you can see here the City of London, Wandsworth, Greenwich, Barking and Dagenham. These are all councils, unitary authorities within London, within Greater London. But here you can see how many unitary authorities by 2031 will be places where the white British are a minority. Now, the other things is you have the purple, the lilac, and the sort of soft pink are mixed. You've got the orange is the Caribbean. You've got dark green is Bangladeshi. Dark purple is African. So the solid dark purple bands are Africans. And obviously that's different to the Caribbeans. Then you've got the dark red, which is Chinese, green, which is Pakistani, the orangey yellow is Indian, and grey is other. So you can see here, and the other, like the other blues are other types of white. So you can see Milton Keynes will still be white overall, but that's mainly because of Eastern Europeans topping up our number. Same with places like Peterborough. Peterborough and City of London are the whitest places by 2031. By the way, City of London is not Greater London. It's the City of London Unitary Authority, which is a small part of London. Those are the whitest places out of all of this. But they're places where white British are a minority because, again, they've had such massive immigration from places like Eastern Europe. So you can see here, these are the sweeping changes. But you can also see something very important, which I'm sure Laura's going to elaborate on. Now, out of all of this, you've got the dark green and the lighter green. They're Bangladeshi and Pakistani. So they're the ones which are definitely going to be Muslim. So you can see in places like Harrow, there's a huge Bangladeshi community. In places like Newham, a huge Bangladeshi community and a sizable Pakistani community. You know, in Bradford, you can see how big the Pakistani community is in Bradford. But when it comes down to it, this demographic change is certainly not solely Muslim. And if you removed the Muslims from these areas, yes, they'd be slightly better if you removed the Pakistanis and Bangladeshis. But it certainly wouldn't bring us out of this demographic nightmare. There needs to be a lot more work done. There needs to be a lot more people deported if white Brits are going to remain a majority.
Yeah, that's the thing. So this screenshot is from a video that I made in response to him in 2019, and as you can see, you know, the percentage of Pakistanis is increasing. We're not saying that it isn't happening, because it is. A percentage of Muslims in this country is increasing, but so is everything else apart from white people. So even just look at the grey bit, which is other. I mean, that's probably all sorts of things. And then you've got African, which is the purple one. You can see that the percentage of African, now some of those Africans might be Muslim, but many of them won't be. In fact, I think I remember looking it up and it was less than 20% of Blacks in the country are Muslim. That's an old figure that I looked up like 5 or 6 years ago. So the majority of those are not going to be Muslim. So to say that the replacement is Islamic is dishonest. It's not. That is an issue. We're not saying that that isn't an issue. But as you can see, it won't fix our problem. It won't stop knife crime. It won't stop politicians getting up in parliament and demanding reparations. It won't stop statues being pulled down. It won't stop diversity quotas. All the issues that we're facing in this country that are racial and ethnic, many of them won't be stopped just by blaming Muslims. And that community, the Muslim community, do bring many, many issues to this country and to Europe. I mean, it's actually the anniversary of the Bataclan attack. The 10-year anniversary was yesterday. I was reading about that again, and God, that was just absolutely horrific. But just want to reiterate, you know, if you look at the colours on the two charts, it's not just Muslims that are replacing us, it's many people.
And also, I think another thing that we have to talk about here is the speed of the replacement. So if you look at Barking and Dagenham in 2011, white British made up just under 60%. You look at Barking and Dagenham now, white British actually makes up less than 10%. It's the same thing with some of the others. You can see how quickly this change has taken place. Now, people say, oh, 20 years. But 20 years is what? A generation or less in human terms? You're talking one generation to completely alter the ethnic makeup of some of these areas. You know, same with City of London. City of London was around 60% white British. You know, by 2031, it's going to be hovering around the 40% white British mark. And this is something that when you look at it in these terms, in these stark terms, you can pick up a lot. This isn't just a Muslim issue. This isn't just an issue confined to one area. It's taking place all over the country. It isn't just an issue with one or two ethnic groups. It's an issue that affects the entire country. It is multifaceted. White Britons are being affected a lot quicker than we thought. The change is absolutely sweeping. It's not like it's just chipping away. It is taking place to such a degree that in places like Barking and Dagenham, it would be difficult to reverse that in a short period of time. And I know people say, well, what about mass deportations? Well, reversing a change like that would be extremely difficult. So when you look at this, it's a lot bigger than, so Tommy Robinson is now talking our talking points, but the problems he's talking about are far, far bigger than he's letting on and are taking place far, far quicker. And one thing that you can assess from this is if these are 2031 figures, and I know it's 2035, that we're in, sorry, it's 2025 we're in now. But if these are 2031 figures, I'm not far off when I'm saying this is all going to be done and dusted by 2050 unless we see a real radical sweeping change where millions of people are deported and the borders are effectively closed, locked down, and then huge incentives are given for foreign-born individuals to leave. Now, whether those incentives are financial or whether we withdraw benefits and bonuses these people get from living here or take away things like, say, halal and kosher food, which shouldn't even be allowed in the UK because it's barbaric and hideous. But whatever we do, it has to be massive and it has to be soon, because if people are still pontificating about this in 2045 or 2040 and there hasn't been any radical change, because of the way demographic works, because of the way demographics have a momentum to them, it will be almost impossible to turn it around at that late stage. What do you think to that, Laura?
Yeah, I mean, this is why I really like this this graphic, because it's so easy to understand and it literally shows you the colours being replaced. I think when you look at numbers, it can sometimes maybe be a little bit more difficult to imagine what that looks like in reality. But here you can just see the blue disappearing, and that's us. That's the white British. So I think all of those things that you mentioned regarding solutions would have a benefit. I mean, just banning kosher and halal slaughter, that would be huge. And then I think, you know, if you were Prime Minister, if that was what we were aiming for, I think a lot of these people would take themselves home, because I don't think they'd, you know, like what would happen in the country. There would be, there'd be British pride, there'd be no pandering to these people, there'd be no interpreters in the NHS, all this stuff, you know, that they're used to having on a daily basis. So, yeah, I think all of those things would work.
But it has to be soon. I mean, really, like I've said this before, and a lot of people don't like it, really the only hope is reform getting in at the next general election, and Farage doing the unthinkable and going mask off and saying, hey, we're shaking this whole thing up. That's really the only way, isn't it?
I think a lot about this. I think, you know, having two young children as well, obviously there's a stake in the future there, and I want to do whatever I can to keep them safe. And as they're getting a little bit older, you know, my oldest is nearly four, and she's like, she's going out and playing with her friends and having parties and stuff. And I do worry, you know, is something going to happen to her if we go to the park or if we go to a little play gym or something? Because the attacks that we are facing a lot in this country now do seem to be on the most vulnerable. So it's something I think about often. And I just think we have safety in numbers. And that's why I really like Patriotic Alternatives community based approach, because there are areas in the country where you do feel safe when you're among your own, and we have some fantastic people, you know, who are able to protect us and able to be self-sufficient in a manner. And I just think that is the path that feels the safest for me and my kids. And I don't have much faith in the electoral system. I feel like you're just working so hard to achieve nothing and be stopped every step that you take. I mean, they wouldn't even allow us to register as a political party. And for those people who said that we filled the form in incorrectly, we registered another party with a different name without mine and Mark's name on it, and they passed us first time. So there are obviously things there that they're doing to stop, you know, genuine nationalist groups. So I just don't have any faith in the electoral system. I think even when you do pass things, even things like Brexit, look at all the problems that faced from people like Gina Miller and the courts and stuff. It just feels impossible to actually make any progress really through that route. So I just feel like we need to be, I like the Woodlanders approach, you know, building our own communities, becoming self-sufficient, defending ourselves, and then maybe creating our own systems and institutions. I'm not sure if there'll be some sort of official separation in the future. But, yeah, I just want to shield my kids from all of this. And I don't think standing in some election in 5 years' time and then having the ability to, I don't know, do something to bus stops or, you know, get a new fence up at the park, I just don't think that's a way forward. I don't think that's going to protect us.
No, and I've got to say this, and some people say it's defeatist, but looking at this graphic, I can't in good conscience tell anyone that they should stay in Barking and Dagenham. You know, if you're in one of these areas like Barking and Dagenham, if you're in one of these areas, you know, Newham, Brent, Ealing, get out. Get out, go to a white area and warn all your new friends and neighbours what happened to the place you used to live in. You know, this is a situation where you can't really stage a fight back. And I've said this before, that the fight back is going to be white Britons clustering together in a multifaceted, ethnic, sectarian society like Northern Ireland on steroids. I mean, I streamed with Zuma Historian for the first time on Wednesday, and he said that without me sort of prompting him. He said, I think it's going to be like, you know, Northern Ireland, but on turbo mode, I think was his exact saying. And I agree. I think that's where we're going to be. I think it's going to be very, very difficult indeed to win these areas back in the short term. In the short term, we need to make sure that we have ethnocentric communities up and down Britain where what are essentially white refugees can come and bring their families and be around like-minded people. That's got to be the first step towards victory.
Yeah, I agree. I wanted to ask you a question about the Tommy video, if that's all right, just to go back to that. Why do you think he's laughing all the way through it?
I don't know. You see, he's a very strange guy. And I think I'm quite good at looking at people's body language, but he does a lot of interviews where he does look like he's potentially on some kind of substance. So you'll see me tonight, other than looking at the chat and, you know, copying the super chats into a Word document to do them later on Rumble and stuff like that, I'm sort of focused on the screen. Whereas he does interviews, he's very red-faced, he's very overly animated and twitchy. And I think he starts laughing and doing this because I think he knows what he's doing is cheeky. He's very jumpy like he always is. He sort of looks slightly on edge. But I think he's laughing and joking about this because he knows what he's doing. He knows he hasn't come up with this. He knows this isn't something that just popped in his head when a squirrel ran across, you know, his path in a park in Poland. He's like, quick, come on, guys, let's get the camera and talk about this squirrel. Just have this. He knows this is obviously choreographed and he's not that good at putting it on, you know. And I'm not saying, like, I've said a lot of things about Tommy, and he is a snivelling little lickspittle for Israel, an absolute snivelling toad for those anti-whites. And his real interest is in Israel first, not Britain first, by any way. But, you know, he is quite passionate about certain things, and you can see that his passion comes through at the end when he brings it back to Islam. That's what he really likes to talk about. And also, I'll say this, he then goes on to sort of, he makes this point, which I think we'd get arrested for making. So he sort of, he goes further with his analogy. We've always drawn the analogy that we're being replaced, like the red squirrels are being replaced. But he then goes on to say, you know, the red squirrels are being, you know, destroyed by these diseased grey squirrels that come here and are like parasitical and carry all these horrible diseases and they kill off the red squirrels. And then he says they're just like Muslims. Basically, he's saying Muslims are essentially, you know, disease-carrying rodents that destroy, you know, everything that's good. And I think if you or I made an analogy that was that on the nose and that blatant, and he's not hiding it, he's then laughing about it. And I think that's the other thing. He's laughing like he knows what he's saying would be enough to get anyone else, you know, arrested and potentially 2 or 3 years in jail. You know, we know people, your husband included, that have been arrested for saying far less than that. You know, Steve Laws was recently arrested. You know, I think that Pete North's a complete donkey, another complete div. You know, he needs a sound talking to him. I'd love to debate that guy, but that's another thing. But what he was arrested for was scandalous and he should never have been arrested. You know, I'm at least fair to people. What Tommy's saying here is far, far more of an arrestable offence than anything that Steve Laws, Sam, Pete North, any of these people have actually been arrested or charged have said. And I think he's laughing for two reasons. Firstly, he knows this isn't his talking point. But secondly, he knows what he's saying would get anyone else but him arrested. And he's now in this kind of untouchable position, I think, because he's got Elon Musk backing him. He's gone and kissed the wall, which gives you, like, you know, superpowers when it comes to getting arrested, doesn't it? You know, if you go to Israel and you know, insert your tongue into the wall at that point, you know, you're basically given diplomatic immunity, aren't you? You know, everyone does it and then they all get a free pass. Why do you think he was laughing?
It's like he didn't have faith in what he was saying. So he would just laugh him because then it could be that he wasn't that serious, if you know what I mean. But do you remember that stream that we did where every time he sniffed, you had a drink of Red Bull and you were just like on sewage? I always think of that as well because it behaves like that quite a lot, doesn't it? So I don't know if that maybe had some impact as well.
Yeah. So look, is there anything else you want to add to this? Because we've got a couple of quick stories I just want to cover, which are equally interesting for people's downfalls.
No, let's go with it.
Well, look, I wanted to cover this, you know, and I'm covering this because, again, I think this is quite funny. And some people aren't going to understand this if they've not been around for a while. So I'm not just like dunking on this guy to be like an arse, but it does need saying. It does need saying. I'm going to read this directly from the Daily Mail. Mike Graham is sacked from Talk Breakfast Show after racist post appearing on his Facebook account that he insisted had been hacked. Mike Graham has been sacked from Talk Breakfast Show following a vile racist post to his Facebook page, which he insisted was hacked. The journalist, 65, was suspended from his show Morning Glory soon after the post was published, but it was confirmed today he will not be returning. The post featured a picture of the statue of Winston Churchill alongside a picture of a crowded tube carriage with the caption, tell me we're not effed by multicultural, well, balls. Why are we surrounded by non-white people? Just F off. It was accompanied by a picture of former Prime Minister Sir Winston Churchill statue by Big Ben next to the train picture whose passengers included a woman wearing a hijab. And it shows the post here. Winston Churchill, loads of people there. And it says, after a considerable backlash, the former Scottish Mirror editor deleted the post and insisted it was made as a result of his Facebook page being hacked. His page was hacked, but he was able to immediately delete it because the hackers go in and leave you access to your page. But keen-eyed viewers were quick to point out that an almost identical photo of the statue of Winston Churchill had been posted on Graham's X account just moments before the Facebook post was published. On Wednesday, staff were told Graham would not be returning to the show. I think he tried to weasel out of it. So bosses accused Graham of initially agreeing to an independent investigation of the incident, but later declining several opportunities to do so. So said, come on, mate, let's have a look at your phone. Let's have a look at your phone. And he was like, I'm not giving you my phone. He said a spokesperson for News UK, the parent company of Talk, said an abhorrent and vile post appeared on Mike Graham's Facebook page in October. Mike Graham said this post was not posted by him and he agreed to cooperate with the company investigation using an independent forensic firm. He later reneged on several opportunities to cooperate. Oh, dear, dear. So basically sacked him. There's the fat idiot there. I'm sure I have another pick at his stupid fat face. There's his stupid fat face. Look at him. Looking rather smug there. Probably not so smug now he's lost his job. And people would be saying, Mark, why are you mocking poor white Mike Graham? Surely you don't think people should be cancelled for losing their job, for saying this kind of thing. Isn't this a bit hypocritical? And my answer is no, it's not. Mike Graham is an arse. He's somebody that for years slagged people like me and Laura off. I think he even made disparaging comments about Patriotic Alternative. He was another one that denied the demographic reality of what was going on. I remember him giving major pushback during the Groyper era when people would phone up his show and say, well, what about white Brits becoming a minority? And he was kind of like a mixture of mocking them that it would never happen to condemning them as being racist. Now he's finally noticed and posted an angry post about it, and he's lost his job. He's kind of getting his medicine. I remember Morgoth making a video about him, criticising him, saying, never trust a man with a wobbly gob. That's what the video was called. And saying that Mike Graham had a wobbly gob and you couldn't trust him for it because he was very two-faced. And I agree. And look, I don't think he should have been sacked for it. I think it's scandalous that he's been sacked for posting his opinion. But he was another one of these people that denied everything we said, slagged us off, said that we should have been deplatformed. You know, he never stuck up for people like Sam or James Costello when they were arrested. And now he's facing a bit of it himself. At 65, he's out of a job. He's not. GB News are going to keep him on. So he's not going to be hard up for cash. So we can all have a laugh because it's not really going to hurt him. But it has maybe shown him what people like us have lived with for years. The arrests, loss of jobs, loss of bank accounts, banned from travelling to Europe for 15 years. We haven't broken any laws. You know, now Mike Graham, the one who was mocking us, you know, deriding us for our points, he's having a bit of it as well. What do you think of this, Laura? Were you amused by the downfall of two-faced Mike Graham as much as I am?
Well, two things. First of all, don't apologise when they catch you on something like that. Don't try to deny it. Don't apologise. Don't backtrack. Just own it, because now everybody hates you. They think you're racist. We think you're weak. So the best thing that you can do is just double down and be like, yeah, I did say that. Because that's an opinion that lots of people have. And it's an opinion that I'm hearing more and more and more from more mainstream voices. Was it a reform woman who recently said something about black faces in adverts or something. I can't remember the exact quote. She got told off for that.
It was Sarah Poaching, wasn't it? And said, you know, why are we seeing this in... Yeah.
So these are, you know, mainstream people that are saying it. So don't back down or apologise or deny something like that. Just own it, because now you've just lost the respect of everyone. But secondly, he has slagged us off by name. I know that he slagged me off by name multiple times and called me a Nazi and all sorts of names for having an opinion that he seems to share based on that post. So I'm thinking, when you were slagging me off, did you secretly have the same opinions as me, but you were hiding them? Because that just makes the whole thing worse. That means that the opinions that you put out are not genuine. You actually share the same opinions as the people that you're slagging off, or have you changed your opinion over the last 5 years or whatever, in which case maybe you shouldn't have been so harsh on the people that you were slagging off to begin with, or maybe you should apologize to them. So I just have no respect for him at all. I can't stand him. He's a rude little man. He's thick. Have you seen that video with him where he was it was something to do with cutting down trees? It went viral at the time, and he was like, well, you know, wood's not renewable. And then some guy was like, well, yeah, it is, because you can plant more trees. And he was like, and it was really funny. Google it if you can find it. It's like some Mike Graham fail to do with trees and wood. But I've never liked him. I think he's just awful. His arguments are weak, and he's a weak person, and he should have just owned it. I might have had a little bit of respect for him if he did.
Look, his phone was totally hacked, but you can't see his phone. I mean, the other thing that's really funny about Mike Graham is imagine saying to your bosses, look, definitely wasn't me, I was hacked. And they're like, right. Instead of them just saying, look, Mike, just stick to the story that you were hacked and we'll keep you on. Instead of doing that, your bosses are like, well, what we're going to do, we're going to hire an independent forensic expert team to come and like take your phone apart and do like an independent forensic examination of your social media to see what photos you've downloaded, where you're posting from, what IP. They were like gunning for him, weren't they? And this really amuses me, because I hate the system and I hate people who work in the system. I've got no time for any of them. All these mainstream media things, talk TV, talk, you know, It's all crap, isn't it? They're all people that would, you know, slag us off and never say a word for us when we're getting screwed over. And now they're all turning on each other in this way, and they're all so scared of having, you know, and Talk TV was meant to be one of these free speech platforms, wasn't it? Like, Talk TV saying the things that the woke won't. And it's like,
I hate that. It's like Who are those? Are they both Jews? Or is just one of them?
No, one of them's a Jew. You know.
Trigonometry.
Yeah. I hate them.
Oh, God. Like, just, they're just so bad for, like, the conversations that they'll discuss. Shall I tell you who I like? I'm gonna get grief for this, but he defended Sam, and he went hard and defended Sam hard. Is it Darren Grimes? Is that his name?
I'm not sure, so I've got that.
I think that's his name. I think he was on the TV, what's the news one? I don't have TV. What's the news channel that's always got like patriotic news on it? It's quite mainstream.
GB News.
Yeah, GB News. He was on that and he defended Sam, and he went really, really hard. And I was like, wow. So I quite like him, but that's just a personal thing. There are many things that we disagree on, by the way. But yeah, these people are always like, you know, we're having the hard conversations and, you know, free speech and snowflakes and all that kind of stuff. And it's just like, no, you're not. No, you're not. Have one of us on. You talk about us enough, so talk to us.
Yeah, when they say things like, look, we're out here pushing the envelope, we're out here like saying the things that the woke brigade wouldn't allow, and you're like, well, why don't you talk about demographics, why don't you speak to Mark and Law? And they're like, oh my God, shut it down. And basically all of them are complete Zionist pigs. All of them push multiculturalism and multiracialism to one degree or another. All of them, you know, would go and kiss the wall in a heartbeat. And I find it all so tiresome. I find these people just absolutely tiresome. And Mike Graham falling off his perch onto his fat face. Yeah, he's, you know, his life isn't going to be. Well, maybe his life might be ruined. I'm sure he was another one of these idiots who took like 4 COVID jabs as well. If I remember correctly, and tell me if I'm wrong, Mike Graham was another one who was sort of like you know, taking the COVID jabs. And, you know, one of the sort of right wing press who were like, you know, if you're not taking the jab, maybe you don't deserve the right to leave your house. You're like, oh, get lost. You know,
I know Piers Morgan said something like that, didn't he?
Yeah, he did. Yeah.
Yeah. He's another one of those. I'm the edgy guy that says the stuff that no one else will. I can't stand him.
I'm thinking that other one that I really despise is Andrew Neil. He was the worst at COVID. He was sort of sat in some sort of, you know, beautiful exclusive restaurant in southern France, complaining, you know, that he didn't want to come back to Britain because we didn't have vaccine passports yet, and other countries were like, and you sort of like, you look at these establishment pigs and you just think to yourself, I really hope you took like 6 or 7 COVID jabs. You know, I really, really do. You know, you absolutely deserve a dose of myocarditis for your disgusting behavior. Because these people were literally whipping up a storm to threaten anybody. You know, and they're like, well, we shouldn't arrest them. We should just make it so they can't leave their houses, buy food, go to work, take their kids to school, or do anything if they don't take the jabs. You're all going to die. You know, and you're like, you people are maniacs.
One of them said that you shouldn't be allowed to use the NHS if you hadn't had the jabs. Can't remember which one it was.
But these are the same people, if you say, like, look, immigrants who just float across the channel shouldn't be allowed to walk into a hospital and get, you know, medical treatment because they've not paid into the system, they've not been born here. These are the same people that would say we're inhumane for saying that. But a British person that's lived here all their life, if they say they're not taking, you know, the COVID jabs, they should be banned from walking into hospitals, banned from entering supermarkets. I can't stand any of these people. And you're right, the worst of the worst is that Konstantin Kissin and that absolute lobotomized idiot that he has sitting at the side of him. I don't even know what his purpose is. You know, like, we've had a conversation tonight, we both made points. Like, Konstantin Kissin has that, like, 70 IQ lobotomized, you know, dribbler just sat at his side for like a 2-hour show, and he just sits there nodding. He might as well, you know those pecking birds that have water in them, so they just peck and then they ride.
Yeah.
He might as well have one of those pecking birds sat at the side of him and just look over as the bird just nods at everything he says, because that's what that fella does. I mean, I'm sure he gets something of a cut of like the ad revenue and what the show makes, but he don't do anything, does he? And the worst thing is, he looks like a freak as well. Like, he's not even sort of like if Konstantin Kissing had an attractive bird sat next to him who said nothing but looked pretty and nodded, he'd at least say, she has some value because I want to look at her. But the guy he's got sat nodding is a complete and utter troglodyte. What is that show about? And there are other ones who, we're fighting the woke. And they always redefine what the battlefield is, don't they? So they're like, oh yeah, we don't want to get on the real battlefield, which is the discussion about race, Jewish power and ethnicity. We want to be on the battlefield of, should we have to use the pronouns that's on your little tag?
It's just lame, isn't it?
What? Should we have to call a man a woman if he thinks he's a woman? This is the hill we're going to die on. You're going to die on the least controversial hill you can find. And same with that little balding, repulsive Tory. What's his name? Toby Young. He calls himself the Toadmeister. He's another one. Runs the Free Speech Union, will never take on any free speech cases.
I think, you know, after what happened with Sam, a lot of people cancelled the membership and he got a lot of pushback on Twitter. And then I think after that, when the riots happened, I mean, some of them did turn into riots, but the protests, you know, after the Southport attacks, I think they did represent quite a few people there. I think they did quite well there, but it was because of public pushback, because he was in a position where he was like, that's too edgy for me, I'm not touching that. And it was like, you're supposed to be free speech, either your entire free speech, or it's not free speech, is it? It's just aligned with your opinions. So I think they have improved. I mean, I'm not on Twitter anymore, so I don't see, but I think after the Southport stuff, they did pick up a few of those cases.
Yeah, I'm actually looking because somebody made like the most incredibly funny video about those trigonometry guys. I don't know if you saw it. Somebody made a song about them. I think I found it. I've got this. You're going to love this, Laura. This is the last thing we'll do. Then we'll go to questions and answers. So if you want to send in a super chat, if you want to ask us anything, please do. But this is for Laura. This is for Laura to make us smile and take her mind off that gammy arm of hers. Have a look at this.
Not necessarily political. I don't know whether an army should reflect society.
I don't give a shit if it reflects society. I don't care. I want the army to be good at doing its job. Why does every institution have to be a tool of...
What am I doing on this show?
Social engineering, effectively, right?
What is my purpose here? Does anybody know? What have I to offer? What's inside my head? Should I be listening to what that other bloke just said? What should I say? I'm at a loss. If I start talking now, will Constantine be cross? Are having to read the news or studied any books? Constantine's the brains of this, so I must be the looks. I know that there will come a day when I will come up with a clever thing to say. And when I say it, everyone will know what I am doing on this show.
Sorry, Francis, to follow up on that. We, as far as, I mean, I didn't know you had this here. I don't know if we have in the UK. We did have some kind of...
I mean, it's so on the nose, but it's so true. That is literally their whole show. He says nothing. He sits there nodding and touching his chin. Anyway.
I don't think I've ever watched a full interview of theirs. I've just seen little clips. I just find them insufferable. That Constantine Kissin, he was the one that told that victim of grooming that she can't collectivise with her people to defend herself. A literal victim of child rape. Because of what allegedly happened to his people in the Holocaust. He was like, you can't collectivise because of World War II. Like, who are you? Why are you telling a British person what they can and can't do? That they literally can't defend themselves against rape? It's disgusting.
I'm just looking this up because Constantine Kissin's father was someone who, he's on the run from Russia. They're a Jewish family from Russia, and his father actually had to flee here in 1994 because he faced imprisonment for a number of different issues. So, you know, his dad is literally part of the 109 club. You know, how many countries have you had to flee, Mr. Kissin? You know, it's like, there is this sort of meme, isn't there, that they have to flee different countries for being involved in sort of corrupt or, you know, anti-native activity. And that's exactly why Constantine Kissin's family's here. So it tells you a lot, really. And also, they call themselves comedians. I've never seen either of them say anything funny ever. I've never been slightly titillated by any of their content. They are both absolute crap. Anyway.
Comedians.
They're meant to be comedians. They're meant to be comedians. That's it.
You learn something new every day.
Somebody in the chat saying he's so ugly. Constantine Kissin is so ugly too. Yeah, both of them. Anyway, we're going to do the super chats. If you want a super chat, if you want to support the show, you can do. It'd be appreciated if you did. We've not got many super chats tonight. Only got about five, so we're going to go through them. Shredstein gave $5. Thank you so much. He said, the Jews still hate Tommy no matter what he does. He implies he is an ethno-nationalist with this analogy. Time for Tommy to quit Sivnat Shilling and embrace his blood and soil. I'm not really sure why you say Jews hate Tommy. Jews seem to love Tommy. I mean, he gets massive funding from Israel. He gets patronage and legal help from people like Ezra Levant. He's run a lot of his campaigns for him. He was aided by Pamela Geller and the Middle East Forum in America that are, you know, powerful Jewish lobbyists. He's been on an all-expenses-paid trip to Israel that was actually paid for by, I believe, people within the Israeli government. I think that liberal Jews in the UK don't like him, but he is. He is definitely, he's definitely someone who enjoys a number of protections afforded to him by fat, powerful Jewish groups and powerful Jewish individuals. Really, the only Jews I know who have turned against him are so liberal Jews in the UK and the British Board of Deputies. But what do you think to that? Do you think Tommy still gets attacked by the Jews a lot?
Well, there was that protest, wasn't there? Was it last year where they told him not to turn up and he did turn up, and then did he get escorted off or something? I think, was that his pro-Israel protest or something? It was something to do with Jews, wasn't it, where they didn't want him there?
Yeah. Yeah.
That's the only thing I can think of, really.
Yeah. But generally speaking, he does have a lot of powerful Jewish allies, and you know, he seems to put Israel before he puts, you know, anyone else. Philip Mailer gave $5. Thank you so much. He said, never actually watched one of your streams live before. Thanks for giving me something fun to listen to at work and make the day go fast. Well, I'm pleased that I'm here to help, my friend. Mr. Smalls 14 gave $5. Thank you so much. He said, with this logic, we were never colonizers in Rhodesia. We merely enriched the natives with white diversity and helped them evolve beyond Zulu supremacy. Well, thank you so much. Well, no, it is funny, isn't it? Because I saw somebody post the other day, and I thought it was quite an important post to make. It was this very sort of important post where somebody said, if somebody arrives from a country like Uganda and sets foot on British soil and they immediately become British, as some people claim, then when we deport them and they land back in Uganda, aren't they immediately Ugandan? And they cease to
you
be
know
British.
What? I saw that post and I was like, it's so simple.
So obvious.
It's so simple, but why have we never said that before? But do you know what it is? It's because the basis of all of their arguments is dishonesty. So you're trying to be genuine with what you're saying, whereas they're like a piece of slime that just changes the argument and the position and the goalposts depending on what you say. So it's impossible to argue with them. So that the gentleman who just super chatted, who said, by their logic, you can't use logic, because their logic is whatever they want to say in that conversation, and it might be different to what they're saying tomorrow. So that's what it is, arguing with these people. You can have a response to everything that they say, but they'll just change what they're saying.
They do. And it's amazing as well. Once you start arguing with these people, and I've heard this like a million times before, you know, even from people who are meant to be on our side, they're like, well, what is white? What is white British? How do you categorize it? And you were actually the person that came up with the best argument to this. I've never heard a better argument than the Laura Towler argument. You said, well, everyone knows whether they're white British or not when they fill out the census. Why do you have to go any further than that? And that's so true. You know, all these liberals start scratching their head. Are you Afro-Caribbean? Are you British? Are you white British? What do these labels really mean? Well, once every 10 years, we all figure out our labels pretty easily and fill out a document with them on.
Yeah. You know, it's not just the census, but everything in this country is already categorized by ethnicity, such as crime figures, prison population, school results, diversity quotas in the workplace. Everything is already categorized by race and ethnicity. But then when it comes to repatriation, everyone's like, oh, I don't know what I am anymore. And it's like, all right, whatever. It's just convenient, isn't it?
It's extremely, extremely convenient that when we start talking about this, it's almost like, you know, deciphering the Dead Sea Scrolls. You couldn't possibly figure out, you know, there's a black guy, you know, from the West Indies, just landed on British soil, got off the plane, but figuring out whether he's a white Briton or not is basically a job for, you know, a team of highly paid biologists, nuclear physicists, rocket scientists, brain surgeons, you know. But you can take one look at him and his passport and figure out that he's not. You know, it's as simple as that.
Yeah.
Right. Mr. Rich178100 gave $5 and he said, we need to be realistic. It's time to talk about balkanization. Well, I think you and I have been talking about balkanization quite a bit tonight, and we've talked about this. I mean, you know, me and you spoke, I remember me and you had an argument sort of 5 years ago, and I said, look, you need to move away from Leeds. You need to, I said, Leeds is going to be gone very shortly. And you're like, no, it's not. No, it's not. It's good. And now you're like, bloody hell, Leeds is gone. It's gone. It's finished. But it is like that. And something that also strikes me is it's something that does affect other white groups. So there are parts of cities which are, you know, Polish. You know, I know there are, in the South Yorkshire area, there are warehouses where to get a job, the job application states you must speak a Eastern European language as a first language, because the majority of the people there, you know, you must speak Polish to work in this warehouse because nearly everyone here is Polish. And if you can't speak Polish, you can't work here. Now, I've got nothing really against Polish people. I think they're wonderful. I know lots of nice Polish people, but to suggest that you need to speak Polish to work in a warehouse in England is wrong. And I think this is going to be a problem all over. And it's going to be such a multifaceted problem. It's incredible. Mm. You know, I think we're going to be hitting this point where, you know, fundamentally, and this is going to be hard for people to accept, but it's going to be a very messy patchwork quilt all over the UK. And we saw when UKIP tried to march, I think it was through Newham, and the Bangladeshi community is so big there, they came out and just said, we're not having this. You know, different areas are going to be dominated by different groups, and the groups that take charge will be the ones that are the most ethnocentric and have the greatest degree of in-group preference. So in a place like Newham, it's going to be the Bangladeshis, you know, and we need to start eyeing parts of this country that are white British and saying, look, we need to move to these places and we need to create our own little white enclaves.
Yeah. I agree. That's why I'm with Pierre.
Draven J gave a generous $50. Thank you so much. And he said, I only discovered you and your channel a few weeks ago and have been binging. Well, thank you so much. And he said, I'm in the process of fleeing to Dubai. Don't hate me. I've never taken an interest in politics or the news recently. Well, we certainly don't hate you. And I hope your time in Dubai works out very well. Dubai's always been one of those places which I've always wanted to visit because it always looks amazing. But I always feel I'm too much of a peasant and I'm not enough of a high roller to fit in Dubai. Do you think I could fit in Dubai, Laura, or are me and you just... I'm definitely too peasanty for Dubai, aren't I?
I'm actually quite shocked that that's the place that you want to visit. I would not have guessed that. It seems like the opposite of what you like.
Well, no, but it's just like one of those places which you can never sort of really figure out what's going on there. It just looks like... It just always looks like every excess imaginable is that, you know, it just looks really kind of like crazy. And I've always just thought, like, I know people that have passed through there, you know, had a layover there and just sort of experienced for a night or two just to see what it's really like. And, yeah, it's, there are places I want to visit, but, I mean, I'm not visiting anywhere, am I? I'm banned from travelling anywhere. I mean, am I banned from Dubai? Should I? Do they have Red Bull in Dubai? Somebody's asked. I don't know. But, yeah, I don't know. I don't think I'd fit in a place like that, to be honest. I'm quite grumpy and like being at home anyway, so maybe Dubai's not the place. You definitely wouldn't fit in Dubai.
No, I don't want to go, so don't worry.
You could have done, if you hadn't have done this, like, crazy career path and sort of ruined your social capital, you could have done a really interesting, like, series of travel videos called, like, A Yorkshire Girl In, and you could have gone to these places and, like, gone in and go, hey up, Chuck. Have you got an ice cuppa for me? And the people in Dubai are like, who's this? But it would have been entertaining. It would have been a bit like, what's his name? That who does The Idiot Abroad?
Oh, Carl Pilkington.
Yeah, you'd have been a bit like an intelligent female Carl Pilkington, but with like a Yorkshire twang. I think it would have worked well. A Yorkshire girl in, and then you'd have been like, you know, in Texas, in Dubai, you know, in St. Petersburg, and seen how people reacted to a genuine Yorkshire lass. I think that'd work. I think that'd work.
Yeah, well, I mean, I would be like Cal Pilkington in the fact that I wouldn't want to go to any of these places. So I'd just be grumpy all the time that I was there.
But isn't Dubai like the place where they have like gold-plated toilets and it's all like just a constant, you know, and everyone drives like a supercar? I definitely wouldn't fit in.
I went to the airport when I went to Australia. I went to Dubai and then down to Australia, and it was just, everything was just big and gold. Yeah, just bling everywhere.
You've been to Dubai?
Only the airport.
See, Laura's better travelled than me, you see. Right, we've got one last super chat. That's all we've got tonight. So one last super chat from Aunt Sally. You gave $5. Thank you so much. And said, in about 1965/1966, I saw the blooded, just shot corpses of dozens of red squirrels lined up along the grass verge on Hampstead Heath. My mother explained that the government had decided they were vermin and hired hunters to dispose of them. That is incredibly sad. That is incredibly sad. I hate things like that. If there's, I mean, obviously there's a lot of things that annoy me, or I sort of wouldn't be doing what I'm doing, but like, I really hate animal cruelty, and I really hate the sort of, you know, do you know, recently I saw, and I'm not saying that I destroyed them, but I might have done, I recently saw a field with a load of mole traps in them. I just thought, why would you bother? Like, what's the mole doing to you? It's just going about its business. They're quite cute. They burrow about underground. They're all fluffy and harmless. Why would you want to catch a load of moles? What kind of complete and utter arsehole, you know, thinks to themselves that pulling these little furry, you know, moles out of the ground and killing them is a good thing? I really despise human nature sometimes. I don't know, unless somebody can give me a reason in the thing to why, like, moles need to be exterminated. But I just hate it. You know, now I am a meat eater and I do like meat. I love my steaks. You know, I love cooking in lard. I'm not somebody who's all kind of like, oh, I'm a vegan and I only eat my coconut tofu or whatever filth they eat. But, you know, when it comes down to it, I do believe in being as kind as possible to animals. And this excess of just destroying creatures and sort of like, you know, hunting things to near extinction, it turns my stomach and it really does upset me. And when I saw these people putting these traps out for these moles, I just didn't understand it. I didn't understand what the necessity of just culling them was and what you'd get out of it. Like, if I had to do that as a job, I couldn't do it. I'd feel guilty. If you said to me, you've got to go out and just kill all these moles for no reason, and this absolute, like, you know, some sort of toff doesn't like a couple of little mole hills on his lawn, I just couldn't do it. I mean, what's your thoughts?
Well, I mean, I don't know if there's a reason. Maybe they were damaging wires or... I don't know. I mean, I can't imagine that they were attacking other animals. They're quite small, aren't they? I don't know. I mean, I guess there was a reason. I don't think they'd just be like, they're there, so I want to murder them. I don't like animal cruelty either. Didn't you rescue a hedgehog once?
Yeah. I've rescued several, actually. I've rescued several. I rescued one with my daughter, and I look like a right nutter because... when I was rescuing the hedgehog, I only had a T-shirt on because it was in summer. So I had to take, I couldn't carry it because it's obviously spiky. So I had to take my T-shirt off and I wrapped the hedgehog up in this little, and I was carrying it. And I had to walk past this pub and everyone's looking at me like, what the hell is this? And some guy's like, it's just some topless guy carrying his hedgehog. And I'm like, well, that's not something you see every day, is it? But it was, you know, I do rescue things and, like, you know, I just can't bring myself. I can't bring myself to that. And if I do see rescued animals, I've rescued little birds, I've rescued hedgehogs, and I do everything I can to actually save wildlife and look after them. I mean, there was one time which really, me and you, when we went to the Skegness event and we found that injured seagull and it was absolutely massive and it was flapping around and we couldn't get near it, and me and you debated, could we get it in my car? And we're like, it was too big, wasn't it?
God, you're getting more and more like my sister, aren't you? Going around rescuing animals. Yeah, I remember when me and Sam went to Kirkstall Abbey once and there was a pigeon on the floor and one of its wings had snapped, and while we were at Kirkstall Abbey there was they had like birds of prey there. So there was a guy there that was like an expert on birds. And we went over and said, can we rescue this bird? Like, is there anything that can be done? And the guy was like, no, that bird's just not recovering. It's just completely had it. I think one of its legs had gone as well. So Sam put it out of its misery, which I just couldn't do. I just could not do that. But Sam was like, it's going to get dark soon. It's on the floor. An animal's going to come and rip it up. So the best thing you can do is just put it out of his misery. But yeah, I couldn't do anything like that.
Do you know how far I went with my animal rescuing?
No.
I actually cracked, by accident, I cracked a snail's shell. And I bought an aquarium, put the snail in the aquarium and fed it and sprayed it with a little water sprayer for months until its shell fully healed and put it outside. And I put new planters in my garden this year. And when I moved the old planters, I found that snail, because you could tell by the bit that had grown back, because there was a bit missing of its shell, and it had grown back, and you could actually tell. And I remember carrying it in and showing it to the missus and Sophia and saying, look, guess who I found in the garden? And the snail was still alive. So I've even gone to the lengths of bringing snails into the house and feeding them. My daughter loves this. Wife isn't so keen on the downstairs toilet having an aquarium full of injured snails, but it's just something I do. I can't stop myself from doing these things because I do feel a real connection to nature. Hazelnut 3000 gave $10. Thank you so much. Said, I'm with you completely, but I do think I have an answer as to the mole killing. If it's livestock are going to be in the field, they can break their legs from mole holes. It wasn't a livestock field, though. But yeah, that's interesting. Draven J gave another $5. Thank you so much. He said $5 for smashing mole traps, hypothetically. If my door goes through tomorrow morning and I'm dragged down the police station and it's not for speech crimes, it's because I've smashed mole traps.
You become an eco-warrior.
it's for this stream. D. Batista gave $10. Thank you so much. Said, caught the last A-team at work today. Genuinely concerned for Mark's health on those shows. No. I'm all good. It's just I don't like losing. And the this month's A-team, it was just terrible. Everything went wrong. I had a cold. We lost nearly every game. I was down in the dumps. We're going to be back next month and we're going to be better, I'm telling you. MD White Vanguard gave $5. Thank you so much. It was nice as a White Vanguard member collaborating with PA in London for Remembrance Sunday. Hopefully the first of many future collaborations. Hail victory. Well, thank you so much. And yeah, Laura, before we go, because we've got a few more minutes, but we might as well just add this on to the end. We've just had an amazing week of activity with Remembrance Day activities, haven't we? You were telling me just how much stuff there's been. And I've been flicking through the PA Telegram page where everyone can see it. It's been big, hasn't it?
There's been a full week of posts on the main channel. Every region went out and did something, and some regions did multiple things. So I know in Yorkshire, for example, there was three separate events. So, you know, 6 years on, we're still there hammering the activism week in, week out. And it's so good to see just the effort and love that people have still got for the organisation, and how the output that we put out is brilliant. And I also liked to see the collaboration between us and White Vanguard. And my experience with them when I've met them has been nothing but positive. And it was a really great video as well.
I've just shared that to my Telegram. And yeah, look, I've met the White Vanguard people and they're really nice people. They're really respectful and they really go about things. Like, some people have been very, very scathing of them. And I'm going to give you, because I don't often do this, I don't often tell you what goes on behind the scenes, but they actually wrote to me and said, look, we'd love to work with you. And I'm like, yeah, well, this is kind of how we do things. And they were like, that's great. You know, and they came along and they were really polite. We met them. We had some sort of food with them, some drinks afterwards. Really, really nice, genuine, honest, decent people. They're not confrontational. They're not there trying to ruffle anyone's feathers. They want to work with other people. And I've been criticized by a certain bitter person for working with groups like White Vanguard, saying, oh, look at Mark Collett, he's endorsing these people. And I think it's amazing because at the moment we've got so many different nationalist groups that PA are working with. You know, we've worked with the British Democrats, the English Democrats. We've worked with Heritage and Destiny. We've worked with White Vanguard. We're working with Remigration Now. I mean, there's probably others that I forgot that we're working with, and we're willing to work with all these different groups, break down barriers, invite them to our meetings, attend their meetings, do joint events. People can come to our camps and conferences. Woodlander Initiative, that's another one we work with in the UK. Unity News Network, David Clues, Workers of England Union, you name it. If people are open to sort of nationalist unity, we'll work with them. And you can see now there's just a couple of these sort of bitter older nationalists, you know, in their sort of 50s, 60s, all bitter and twisted, that don't want to see anyone working together. Well, we feel the opposite way about it, don't we, Laura? We actually foster this idea of nationalist unity.
Who was that? Nick Griffin?
Yeah, it was. I mean, look, I'm going to say this. He is a bitter, sad old man that no one in the UK wants to work with. Remember when he tried to hold that like electioneering conference and was charging tickets and they didn't sell a single ticket and they had to cancel it?
I remember when he told everyone that I was a Satanist because I was wearing an upside down cross, but it was actually just a bumblebee on my necklace.
But did you know what it is? I always feel I'm in this position. So if I was slagging off different nationalist groups, right, then everyone would say, oh, look, Mark's a fed because he doesn't want unity. But instead I say, oh, let's have unity. Let's work together. And he's like, look, he's a fed. He's trying to bring everybody together. And it's like, whatever you do, they're going to criticize you for it. And it is a very bitter thing to do, to attack groups like White Vanguard, because they're young men. They're out on the streets. You know, they're doing things slightly differently to the way we do it. But the thing is, there is a place in nationalism for different groups doing things a slightly different way. You know, why can't people do street activity with White Vanguard, then do a little bit of work with PA, community building, you know, then go and do a banner drop with Remigration Now, then go to the Woodlander Initiative and do some, you plant some crops on the land and have a camp. You know, there's... You can do all these different things and work with people, you know, and that's what we want. You know, we just had a $5 super chat here from S Stan One, and it says, more collaborations the better, needs must. White Vanguard do great work. You know, people in the chat like this, people in the chat support it. I mean, you're all for that, aren't you? Me and you have attended, when we had that unity meeting, you know, it was PA that funded the cost of the room and everything. We've done everything in our power to try and bring people together.
Yeah. There's a lot of egos in nationalism, and you know, a lot of people say, well, if you're with our group, you're not allowed to do anything with other groups. But we've never said that. You know, there are obviously people out there that we don't trust and don't get on with, but we're not one of those organisations that says that you can't go off and do activism with other people. I mean, Steve Law spoke at our conference and he was like, I'm not a member of Patriotic Alternative, but we're on the same side, and we are. You know, all this discussion that we've had tonight about the issues that are facing our country and facing us, we haven't got the time or the resources to stick in small groups of just, you know, a few hundred people in each group. It needs to be working together. So it's important.
It certainly is. It certainly is. We've got a couple more super chats. People are sending them in late, and we'll obviously keep answering them. So thank you for your generosity. Larry Fink ate my packed lunch, gave $25. Thank you so much. And said, the endeavour of a state is to ensure peace within its borders. Once it fails to do so, it loses its legitimacy. That's an interesting point. But I actually think the British state is trying to fan the flames of discomfort. I think the British state is trying to bring out about a case of anarcho-tyranny. And I've talked about this before. You know, they want violence on the street. They want disorder, because every time they get disorder and they get violence, they can then bring in new laws. And this digital ID is largely being sold to people on the back of, well, we'll all be safer and look at all the terrible things that are happening. Well, the terrible things happened because people opened our borders, not because we didn't have smartphones with some blockchain ID attached to it. It's ridiculous. What are your thoughts on that, Laura?
Well, I agree. You know, I mentioned the Bataclan attack recently, and somebody had posted about it somewhere where I saw it, and there was a comment underneath saying, in the past, you know, hundreds of years ago, this would have been a good enough excuse for every single Muslim to be deported from France. But today it's just, let's lay some flowers down and placating and don't look back in anger and all this rubbish. And then the real enemy, the one that they focus on, is nationalists, is patriots. You know, think about Keir Starmer's response to the Southport protests and riots, how hard it was, you know, arresting people and then getting them into court and in prison within like 3 days. That never happens, but he wanted to make an example out of them. And there's a reason that they chose those people to make an example of. It's a message that they want to spread. So, yeah, I mean, we are the enemies, but considering what they're doing to this country, I don't want to be on the same side of them. So I'm quite happy to be labelled an enemy of these people.
Indeed. Grand Baby Nepo gave $10. Thank you so much. Said, one of the great things about PA is that it's family orientated. Most white nationalist male only groups out there don't represent this foundational part of society. Yeah. I mean, I've always wondered this because, like, as a dad and as someone that is heavily invested in family, one of the things that I'm most proud of with PA is our family focus. I do understand the need for both female-only spaces and male-only spaces, but I do genuinely believe that winning our country back will be something that men and women need to do together, and families need to be put first. And if we are to survive, a genuine community is one that does put family first. You know, people say faith, folk and family. And, you know, those are the sort of three F's that we kind of live for. You know, people say race and nation as well, but I quite like faith, folk and family. You know, those are very important. And I'm always really happy when we have PA events, whether there are mothers and children there. You know, one of the things that always makes me most proud is when people say, oh, I met my girlfriend at a PA event. You know, I met my wife at a PA event. I wouldn't have my baby sat with me now if we hadn't been to this PA event, because we met at a PA event and this is a PA baby. You know, in a very real sense, we can't secure a future for our people if we're not having future generations. And the fact that people are coming to PA and meeting the partner they go on to have, you know, children with, I think it's wonderful. And obviously, yeah. You met Sam at a PA event, didn't you? So
yeah, well, it was sort of before. It was. Do you know when we were just having the camps before PA was actually established?
Didn't you? You met him, you know, at that.
Yeah. But then we got together just after
when it was PA. Yeah,
yeah, so we knew each other as friends. We were sort of in the same circles, but then we got together after PA formed, like literally a month after or something. But yeah, I mean, I agree that men and women need their own spaces. In PA, we have the PA ladies group, which men are not allowed in, where we talk about, you know, stuff that women want to talk about. But we would never object to men having, I don't know, a fitness session or something that was just for men. I completely agree that we're different and we're not interchangeable. So we do need our own spaces. But we are in the same struggle and, you know, we care about it too.
Yeah, we do have a ladies group. We also have the top secret Mark's Meltdown group, where I scream at people regularly for not performing correctly in computer games or doing exactly what I tell them. That group is very small and exclusive and gets smaller by the day. It's strange. the Mark ritual abuse group is not growing as quickly as I hope, Laura. Do you have any tips for me?
I think we're past that at this stage. I don't know what I can say.
You know, one day you're going to get the call. One day you're going to get the call and it's like, look, might be good news, might be bad news. Mark's not here anymore. And you're like, what do you mean he's not here anymore? It's like, look, he's not here. He's gone. He's dead. He's dead. He had one Red Bull too many. One Red Bull too many. And some kid didn't do what he was telling them to do in a computer game. Some lad. And it was aneurysm. What are you going to say then, Laura, when you have to take over and be in charge because I finally had the ultimate meltdown due to somebody not carrying out my express wishes in a computer game when I've had one can of Red Bull too many? How will you take PA forward?
It's mad, isn't it? Because, like, I don't think I've ever had a meltdown in my life. I don't think I've ever lost it. Like, I'm such a calm person. And then you do have meltdowns rather regularly. But I think maybe that's why we we work together so well because we complement each other.
Yeah, it does work. It does work. We've got one last super chat from Larry Fink, ate my packed lunch. Another $5. Thank you so much, my friend. He said, once the state becomes a political entity, it is compelled to identify the domestic enemy vis any challenger to its power. That's why law-abiding and peaceful nationalists are treated as terrorists within a pluralistic liberal state. That's a very important point. I mean,
posted it, twice, hasn't it, that one?
Was it no, that's a follow-up to what he said earlier. Basically, what he's saying there is the state is basically more focused on stopping nationalists getting to power because they're a threat to its state power and the status quo than they are about protecting normal people from the immigrants they bring here. So if you actually look at the way the state focuses its power and focuses, you know, particularly the police, secret services, etc., there is a greater focus on nationalists who threaten the state's power than there is on people who are actually harming citizens. Anyway, thank you for that super chat. That is the end of the super chats. We're all out of them. And thank you to everyone who donated so generously. If you want to donate when I'm not online, you can do. We're going to close things down now because that is the end of the questions. And I think me and Laura are going to be doing maybe a Friday night stream once a month now to catch up like we used to. Just talk about different topics, do questions, answers. Quite entertaining. I've really enjoyed it tonight. I'll be back on Sunday reviewing the Australian Nationalists documentary, Winter Nationals. People have asked me to do that. I'll be playing it live, breaking it down, giving you my thoughts. And telling you whether it's as good as Summer Nationals, which I thought was amazing. Laura, you can have the last say, my dear. Anything you want to bring up before we shut it down?
I just have really enjoyed streaming with you. I know we don't get to do it as much anymore. Obviously, with Sam going away and me having two young children and the stream start at their bedtime and I was by myself. But yeah, I mean, Sam's got 3.5 months left and then his license is over and he's a free man. So I'm sure he'd love to come on PWR that week when he's finally free. but yeah, I've really enjoyed talking to you and engaging with the audience as well. So I can hear that Violet's just started crying downstairs. So I'll keep it quick and just say I hope you all have a lovely weekend and take care and see you soon.
Well, thank you so much to Laura. Thank you to everybody who tuned in and thank you to everyone who donated so generously. If you're out doing activism this weekend, please stay safe and mind what you're doing. Don't get into any bother. I'll be back on Sunday to review Winter Nationals and I'll be back next week for Patriotic Weekly Review. Until then, there's a wealth of material out there that you can watch if you want to catch up with all the different interviews and things I've been doing. And until then, stay strong, keep fighting. I love you all, and I'll see you all again soon. Have a great weekend. Thank you, and good night.